Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Whitey, good morning to you.
Good morning, Daniel. Nice vest.
It is a nice vest.
It's very comfortable.
I quite like the RSN 927 vest. It's a puffer.
Yeah.
A little puffer vest. And it's a good thing. And it's one of the seasons we need to wear it.
Yeah. I wear mine too much, I know, but it's really comfortable. It means you don't have to iron your shirt and it keeps you warm.
That is true. That is true.
It makes me look even bigger than I am, which is I've embraced that factor and we just move on.
Well, it's a nice warm garment is what it is. It's perfect for this season as we move into the winter months around here on RSN 927.
Indeed. I was just interested, just even as I was walking to the studio on the television, we thought that the Cam Bancroft comments might gain a bit of traction after he made them to a UK journalist. He's over playing cricket in the UK at the moment, Cameron Bancroft,
yes.
over the ball tampering situation.
Yes.
Hasn't it caught fire?
It has caught fire.
What do you think will happen now?
Which way do you think it's caught fire?
Well, I just think that most people thought that everybody knew. But the fact that he's come out and essentially said that the bowlers knew, and then Michael Clarke comes out so strongly on Sydney radio yesterday and says it. And now Cricket Australia have sort of said to Cameron Bancroft, okay, Cameron, that's fine what you've said. If you've got more information to share, we want to hear it.
Well, yeah.
But that was, it was sort of, you know, probably saying, don't come forward, but you can if you want to.
Mm.
And as I said to you yesterday, and it was sort of confirmed yesterday as well, when the investigation took place, there wasn't everybody interviewed. There was only a select few that were interviewed.
Yeah.
And I made the comment yesterday, it was almost like, well, we don't really want to know what happened,
yeah.
So we'll just sort of do a little bit. Because the reality was that the three of them were sent home, Steve Smith, Dave Warner, and also Cameron Bancroft. If they all knew, well, they clearly couldn't have played the final test in South Africa because they all would have been suspended. And I don't think, I mean, as bad as it was that the captain, arguably the best player, and the other opening batsman were suspended, can you imagine if the whole team was suspended?
That would make the series difficult to see out.
And it would make it a hell of a lot worse when it was very, very bad anyway.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing. This is why I think there's not a lot of sympathy for Cricket Australia in this or love for them, because they clearly threw it. And I must admit, looking back over it after seeing the story on the weekend, I mustn't have followed the investigation process and the story very closely at the time. Maybe the drama of all of it just got too much and I just put it in the too hard basket. I don't recall how I managed it. But I don't recall the investigation process where the fact that, as you highlighted yesterday, that was, they interviewed whoever they needed to interview, but no one else. Like, the fact that there wasn't a full interview process of every single person that was on that tour is absolutely gobsmacking when you think about it.
Mm.
If they're going to get to the point where they're suspending players, sending them home, and they just spoke to a couple of people?
I think it was more than a couple. But as I said, it wasn't everybody.
Well, including the fast bowlers who perhaps were using the pill.
Yeah.
Five people were being told.
Yeah.
Five people.
Yeah.
That in itself, as I did say yesterday, that's an indictment on Cricket Australia's investigative process. Or whoever did it. I'm not even sure who did it. But whoever did it, that was a disaster. That's an absolute balls up. As you said, they didn't want to find out what they thought they might find out. Mm. So they just did the peripheral, please the people back home by sending a couple home. We'll get a few scalps. We'll say we've spoken to everyone and we'll let it go. We'll get through it. It's a disaster from start to finish. Clearly the actions of the players, number one, and then the process of Cricket Australia.
Well, you've got to remember that they tried to deny it initially. There were lies told at press conferences and all that sort of thing before they came clean. So it was, as you said, it was a disaster from the moment and also not just that half. You don't just decide to do it in that one game. Clearly, things had been happening before then. I shouldn't say clearly. It would appear the thing. I don't think you can just all of a sudden say, right, okay, we're going to do this in this match. That they didn't worry about what had happened potentially in the past either. It was just about that particular incident because they'd been caught on camera.
Mm.
So, and as I said, I still think it goes on in first-class cricket in a variety of different ways. whether that be whatever it be, to be honest, because there's so many different things you can do to alter the ball.
Yeah.
It still happens in first-class cricket. So, but probably not using sandpaper that's in your pocket.
But I think it's a bit rich, Cricket Australia coming out now saying, oh, Cam, if you've got anything more to say, come and tell us. The investigation's still open.
Strong leadership in that situation is, Cameron, we want to speak to you.
But I go back to my point before. Like, if you're going to interview five out of the whole touring party and not include the fast bowlers, well, you're not very serious about it.
I agree.
So don't go pretending it's still open and you're serious about it now just because someone's said something that's caught you off guard.
Yeah.
Like, give us a spell. Mm. If you either do it properly the first time and take it seriously, or cover your backside and move on like you've done and then let it go. Whatever happens, you've made your bed, now you're lying it. I think it's a very interesting scenario. As someone said yesterday, I hope the Cameron Bancroft is not the fall guy for this again.
Well, he was the first time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, I reckon, it's super disappointing. Super disappointing. But we'll see where it all ends up. But it is a fascinating byplay now because it has opened the can. And it might not be Cricket Australia who does more investigation. It might be investigative journalists who go deep and try and find out a bit more about what happened. And who knows where that goes. But poor old Cam Bancroft, I reckon, is going to cop at the neck again.
Mm.
Which is not cool. Which is not cool. Hey, did you see there's more injuries in the world of footy? Did you see? There's a bit happening in the world of footy, which I want to get to shortly. But Winkers is in Castlemaine. He's given us a call on the open line, 1-300-652-927. Hello, Winkers.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Going well, thanks. Is it just the Winkers? Because you can see enough, you don't quite need the full blinkers.
Yeah, mate, you just need to see straight. Don't need to be covered up. How we like to be, mate.
Righto, what do you got for us?
Line. Oh, just, you know, like Whitey said, you can only imagine it's been going on earlier, all that ball tampering sort of stuff, but as if the fast bowlers didn't know, you know, like, this why it was always going to rear its head, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, Bancroft will be the fall guy because they don't want him talking about it, but, you know, nobody likes to be caught out lying, and some of the fast bowlers need to actually put their hands up. And I suppose when they do their tell-all biographies and make their money out of that and everything else, that's when it all come out. I mean, it's actually quite sad that it's coming out now. They actually should have dealt with it a lot more properly at the time. And no one likes being caught out, and the fast bowlers are going to get caught out in all this. And they should have put their hands up at the time, and, you know, Smith and his crocodile tears and all the rest of it. Like, I think the public's stupid, but we're actually not. We know, especially if you've played cricket. There's always been tampering with the nut, hasn't there, Whitey?
Well,
are you a tamperer, Whitey? Are you a tamperer? This is what Winkers is
saying. I can't get a half-tape tennis ball to swing, so I'm probably not the right person to ask. But I think, as I said, I mean, it's always gone on. That's just the reality. In international cricket, you know, right the way back to bottle tops and... there's a text coming in here about scraping balls in gutters and all sorts of things. It's one of those things that happens. But sort of as Winkers said, because the bowlers have sort of denied, you know, sort of I know nothing sort of thing, that's all happened and it's in the past. But it's hard to now backtrack and say you did know, isn't it? Because everyone wanted it to be swept under the carpet and never look under the carpet again. So, and kind of out of nowhere, this interview's taken place where... I don't think anyone's shocked that Cameron has said what he said. I think everyone's a bit shocked that he said what he said, if that makes sense.
Same but different?
What
do you mean, man?
No, I don't think anyone's surprised that Cameron Bancroft thinks that way. I think they're just surprised that he actually came out and said it. He's only saying what everyone knows was the case.
Yeah, right. Okay. Thank you, Winkers. Nice to have you on board, Early Doors. 1-300-652-927. I just hope he doesn't get hauled over the coals for it again. I just don't think that's right. Because, as you said...
Well, he's had his penalty. He can't get in any more trouble.
No, but he can be blackballed.
By the players.
Yeah.
That's going to be the problem, potentially.
Yeah, that's right. Who are the bowlers in that series? Do we remember?
The ones that bowl now. Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins and Lyon.
Just sit back. Our second tier is ready to go. Though Nice is bowling well, and Pattinson's
bowling very well.
Pattinson's doing his thing. We've got a stock underneath that we could probably bring in if we needed to. Oh goodness! You know, that's just your imagine. We'll see. We will see where it all goes.
Mm.
Toby Green. Now, I know we'll talk to the Buzz about this a little bit later on, but what a disaster.
Out for a month.
Out for a month.
Thereabouts.
Fractured, was it shoulder or collarbone?
Yeah, he played on.
Yeah, I saw him hurt it. He sort of just started shaking his arm around and doing the old circle, shoulder circle action, and you thought, oh, that looks like he might be in a bit of pain, but continued to go on. Scans confirmed yesterday, right shoulder fracture in the game, in the third quarter, I think it was, but continued to play on for the Giants and nearly won the game for him.
The injury crisis across the league is quite remarkable, but it's not like everybody's getting soft tissue injuries or, you know, that there's a pattern. I mean, some of the injuries we're getting obviously a lot of ankle injuries, but we're getting shoulder problems, we're getting all sorts of different injuries. And David Cunningham proven last night that he needs a knee reconstruction.
Yep.
But it's not like there's a pattern developing. But we are getting a lot of very good players too that are on the sidelines at the moment. I mean, Patrick Dangerfield's still at least a month away.
Yeah, it is. I'd love to know the breakdown between soft tissue and collision injuries, this shoulder one from Toby Green, and the ACL stuff. I mean, that's not a collision injury, but it's any sort of control injury. It's not a preparation injury as such. I did see yesterday somewhere on Twitter that there's been 20 hamstring injuries that have required the Medisub to be used in nine weeks. So what's that? 81 games, one every four games for hamstring requirements just in game for the Medisub to be activated. I would love to know what that is looks like in terms of hamstring injuries compared to round nine last year or the year before. Last year was an unusual year in itself, but the year before, and whether or not it is more, there are more injuries, because I don't count collision injuries.
No.
Because they're just random incidents.
Yeah.
And I don't count ACLs because they're just a bit the same. But the soft tissue ones are more a reflection on your preparation and whether or not this shorter preseason coming off a later finish last season is actually a factor in what's happening this year. I'd love to know that data.
Mm. Yeah, the ankle injuries are interesting because I think even across the course of the weekend where a lot of people were frustrated around umpires not paying holding the ball, and the AFL have said that there was no direction to change the interpretation. It looked like there was, but there apparently was no new change. But what's happening is as players are holding on to the ball longer in tackles, then they're getting their feet caught in tackles and they're getting ankle problems. And then also with the wrestling coaches and the way that they get guys to tackle, they're tackling better now and they're pinning arms or they're holding onto one arm and all those sorts of things, and feet as a result are getting stuck in bodies around them and all that sort of thing. So you can try and find patterns as to why things are happening, but generally speaking, I think there's just such a wide collection. I'm not sure whether you can deduce anything from it other than the fact that there's a lot of players getting injured.
A lot of players around the footy. There are. I think the want to continue to get ball flow into the game from headquarters is one of the biggest reasons we get those tackle injuries.
Mm.
Absolutely. Because players put themselves in horrible positions to just dispose of the ball. Now, often it's illegally, but it's allowed to happen because of the current interpretations. So they just dispose of it in horrible positions, and that's why you get sling tackle issues with head knocks as well. But players' legs and arms get in really bad situations, and they get injuries on the back of that. So I think the desire to keep the ball moving is contributing to a lot of these stuff as well. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Greg's in Williamstown. Hello, Greg.
G'day, guys. Just ring about Raptors coming. You know, I'm pretty frustrated about some. Like, I was watching a rugby game here, like the amount of throws that Geelong were able to get away with. There's one patch to play with about five throws. But a lot of it's sort of, you know, they're throwing on the blind side of the umpires. And I can appreciate the fact that, you know, one of them might miss it. But the umpires tend to be in the corridor and they're not, like one of them, the nearest one, should be boundary side so that they can get all angles covered. Like, and in the circle, I was just watching a review last night, like, how the hell they missed that trip on Hill from Radicalia, and they paid the free kick to Radicalia. Like, just take it for a week. I can understand how frustrated Ratton is, because, you know, despite the fact we couldn't kick straight, but he's, you know, umpires have got to position themselves better.
Well, that's the way they're instructed to do it. I remember a couple of years ago, Greg, that they were watching the basketball referees, and they were playing these triangles, in like triangle shapes, in terms of where the umpire's positioned, they would create a triangle. And they'd cover both sides of the contest. I don't see that, particularly between the arcs, I don't see that happening anymore. They're all back in the corridor, seemingly. I might be wrong here, but just from my observations. They're all back in the corridor, so that the boundary side flick and throw is exactly what the players have learned to do because they know they can get away with it.
And that's right. And I think they have tried that, and they have tried a number of different positional changes to get a better view of it. But that's when that's that situation where, because you're watching it on television and you're getting a certain view, often it's a different view to what the umpire is getting if the umpire is in the corridor.
Yep.
And sometimes they simply can't see. But we were only talking about this last week. We also get frustrated when we see umpires overruling each other because they think they can see something from 150 metres away or 100 metres away. Sometimes they can actually see the same incident, but they just interpret it differently.
They do.
Interpret. You probably have been sufficient.
I didn't want to go there. I was going to just let it slide. It's early on a Tuesday morning. I was going to let it slide. I didn't think you needed to interpret it any differently.
I was going to go with interpretation and sort of went halfway.
Look, it's a bugbear, Greg. There's no doubt from footy fans at the moment. But these aren't necessarily the problems of the umpires. It's the problems of the lawmakers who want the game officiated in a certain way.
It does feel, though, Half, that the last few weeks, even the last couple of weeks, that people have started to get frustrated about the umpires.
Yeah, well, I have.
It seemed to have been the case in the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and I agree. I have, and it's not something I ever really engage in, you know. It's not my thing.
Does that have anything to do with the fact that we think the game's heading back to where it was? Because the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, everyone was celebrating that football had returned. Steve Hocking was a genius with the rules that had been put in place. There were high scores. The ball was moving from end to end a lot quicker.
Mm.
The last 2 or 3 weeks, that hasn't been the case. It's gone back to how it was. Yeah, but not just the scoring. I think there have been more players around the football. I think there has. I think defence is winning out a lot more than it was earlier in the season. I don't think teams are moving the ball as fast. It doesn't feel like the man on the mark rule is having the same effect it was early in the season. And maybe we're getting more congestion around the ball, and that's when it's harder to umpire.
We're just going through the round last week, and there are only 2 scores of 100 points or more.
And they were kind of, was West Coast and Brisbane?
West Coast and Brisbane, spot on. So, massacres, mismatches.
Yeah.
The week before that, 1, 2, 3, and one of those was the smacking of Geelong against Richmond.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be high scoring for it to be free flowing.
Well, just as a
it helps
as
but
a,
it
as a sample size.
Yeah,
there were 5 in round 1, and round 2, 1, 2, 3, 4 in round 2. So 1 and 5 and 4 in rounds 1 and 2, 2 and 2 in the last couple of rounds.
Mm.
So maybe there is something to it. Good point. Might do some more analysis of that through the morning. Let's get to the world famous 5-question Whitey Vlado's quiz. $210 voucher, lunch or dinner for 2 at Vlado's, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse. A family business for nigh on 60 years. We've never had anyone run the board. That is to go all the way, start to finish, without stopping. There is an extra prize on offer for that feat. No one's ever run the board. There's never been a board runner.
All right.
I would like to see that change today.
All right. I like the quiz today.
You said it's not very hard.
It's not very hard. It's a bit around what's happening at the moment. So, I think it's doable today. Michael from Essendon is going to be the first person to have a crack at it today. Michael, good morning.
G'day, guys. I'll give it my best shot.
Come on, Michael. Right. Come on.
I'd be disappointed if you can't do it, to be honest.
Oh, really?
All right, Michael, first question. Last weekend, all NRL clubs played in Brisbane. What was the round called? It's a special weekend.
Magic round.
Very good. Answers with real confidence.
Well, he's now the only one that can run the board.
Yep, correct. Which sporting team, question number 2, which sporting team qualified for a 35th consecutive finals campaign last night?
Oh, yeah, that'd be the Wildcats.
Correct.
The Perth Wildcats.
Very good, very good. Extra information is always helpful. That is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a feat. It's a world record.
Yeah, it's amazing.
If you're ever in doubt, just ask the West Australian Nullan, mind you.
Yeah, that's exactly.
No,
right.
they're very big on that. Exactly they are very right. big on that.
All right, Michael, get your listening ears on. Here's the famous voice for the day.
I think an important part of playing is also the continuity that you get, and you just get used to it, so your body adapts.
Who is that, Michael?
Patrick Dangerfield.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Oh, I'm getting excited now.
I think he's going to do it because the last question's not hard.
How could the last question not be hard in a five-question quiz? What are you doing,
Michael,
man?
Question number four.
I've never had a board runner.
Who won the FA Cup over the weekend?
Yes, that'd be Leicester.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
All right. Do we change the last question to make it harder?
Well, this is a piece of history in the making here. Well, I would imagine that it would be a more difficult question than you're about to insinuate. Surely, for a board runner. I mean, we've got to make this a feat worth achieving. If this is just a lay-down mazair, that's been a pretty straightforward quiz, to be fair.
Do you like golf, Michael?
Oh, no.
Oh, it's not my strong point.
All right, okay. So this week it's the US PGA Championship.
Oh, no.
In South Carolina. Who is the defending champion?
Yeah, I know he's an older guy.
Michael Bond.
Oh, that was...
No, well...
That was brutal!
No, I'm sorry, Michael.
That's brutal!
Well, firstly, he's not an older man, so he was on the wrong path, on the wrong tram.
Oh, he would have come around.
I think he would have... I thought he was going to get that. I thought that it was going to go from top to bottom.
Oh, boy. The board
Scooter
runner.
Scooter from Reservoir. Good morning, Scooter. No, he
so even he's left in disgust.
Scott from Geelong. Good morning, Scott.
Dustin Johnson.
No, it wasn't Dustin Johnson. He won the US Masters last year when it was played in October or November, whenever it was. 1-300-652-927. We're up to the last one.
Came in strong, man.
Simon from North Caulfield. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, guys. The young bloke. Is it Colin somebody? Colin.
Oh, yeah. Keep going.
Come on, Simon. This is the prize.
You're there.
Colin Mariqua or something, or Mariqua?
Got to give
you
that.
Yeah, we'll give it to you, Simon.
Got to give that. It's the same letters, just said differently.
Colin Morikawa. I can't even say it properly for some reason. Is that Morikawa?
Morikawa,
that's
right.
Yep. That'll do. Simon, well done, mate. Well done. You've won the prize.
John, a.k.a. Colin Ralph from the Herald Sun, The Buzz, who's on the line, ready to talk to us about the latest news in football. Good morning, Buzz.
Hello, gentlemen. You're a very generous man, aren't you? They're the same letters, they're just said differently. That's what happens to me most of the time when I look at the English language. And so I'm going to write, I've actually written it down, same letters, just said differently. So when you guys sack me and you say no one can understand you, I said they're the same letters, they're just said differently.
Colin Mariqua is the same as Colin Morikawa, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, have you got that right, Ralphie? You would have got
that right. I would have got that right, yes. He's an exceptional talent, and sometimes when you have a collect on someone, at good odds, just like, you know, at Talak in 1962 or all those betting pros, sometimes you just never forget, Daniel. You never forget.
No, you always remember the good ones. That is true. That is absolutely true.
1986 at Talak.
I thought 62 was a long way back for at Talak. Might have been a second edition. Ralphie, speaking of a long way back, are the Blues a long way back? A bit of news coming through from them in the last 24 hours or so?
Well, I mean, David Cunningham with an ACL doesn't help. And look, I know the club's talking about just a little AC injury for Harry Mackay. Look, you know, Doc Larkin said, look, it looks every bit like that subluxation that just keeps popping out. But anyway, the club's adamant that that's the injury for Mackay. He's going to have to carry that throughout the year. Look, it was fascinating what Mick Malthouse wrote about in the Sunday Herald Sun on the weekend. He tried to compare them to Melbourne. He talked about their list demographic, and he talked about their progress. What he was screaming at but didn't say is, it's the coaching. You know, this is a club that, you know, that David T keeps saying, we've got to play four quarters. You know, we're not playing four quarters. That's the reason why we're not winning. You know what? You don't have to play four quarters, because if you have a good coaching structure, you can absorb the one or two bad quarters and then you come out and win the game. Now, I think the question that needs to be asked, and I think the question that the new president-elect Luke Sayers will be asking, is if we had a Ross Lyon or if we had a coaching of senior experience, would we have won three or four more games this season? And I think that the answer is probably yes. To think that they had the talent there, and yes, they probably lack a star midfielder or two, and they've missed the likes of Jack Martin, you know, with injury, and they'd love to, you know, some of their recruits to be better. But that's the real frustration with Carlton right now. They've got enough talent, they've had enough years of experience in terms of building that talent. You just got to say that defensive system just continues to fail them at critical times.
I don't know if we can confidently say that there'd be another few more wins.
Which games would have they won, Ralphie, if Ross Lyon or Alistair Clarkson were coaching Carlton?
Well, they were good enough to win that game on the weekend. You know, they're continually dominating periods of games, and they kick a winning score, but they allow a team to kick... Well, when you've seen the statistics, I think it's like 18 periods of conceding 6 goals in a row. And so, you know, whether that's David Teague's issue, whether that's, you know, as a lot of people have speculated, it's time for them to replenish their coaching stocks, you know, whether it's getting that elite person in there, you know, I think we're realising now with Nathan Buckley and Justin Longmuir, so often it is a coaching team, but so often it's the coach that gets it in the neck, where Justin Longmuir moves off and all of a sudden the ball movement and the capacity to stop goals is diminished. And so... Yeah, all I would say is that Luke Sayers is someone who reminds me of what happened to Carlton when Brett Ratton was there as a reasonable coach, and they thought to themselves, we want something bright and new and shiny that we can sell. And so they secured Nick Mulder. And so, you know, the more you listen to people who know very well about Luke Sayers, you know that he's a mover and shaker. He's a bright young thing that wants to get it done himself. You know, he's got the ear of the powers that be. He's got the ear of the Foxes. And he's the kind of guy who's going to want to come in and put his stamp on the football club. Now, if the club is in a really solid position, win-loss positionally, that's fine. But if it is that David Teague is still, let's call it 8-14 or whatever it is, well, Luke Sayers is a pretty impatient guy who wants this club to win premierships. And right now, they've got enough talent to not win premierships, but to be better than what they are. And so, yeah, I think that David Teague would be very aware of that right now. And so, you know, they're trying to fix their defensive systems, but I wouldn't think anyone in the competition thinks that their game plan defensively is in the top 15 in the comp.
And I think, Ralphie, the thing with... And look, I reckon I must be in the minority here. I think where Carlton sits at the moment is where they should sit based on their list. They've had a very difficult draw. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Second most difficult according to the form ladder.
So when I look at their next four, it's Hawthorn, and then it's Sydney away, West Coast at home, and then the Giants. You know, I'd like to think that they could win two of those four at least. But I think there's two parts to the conversation with Carlton. It's should they be winning more? But I think it's, as you were saying, are they too easy to play against? But I think they're two different conversations, aren't they?
Well, so they're 3-6. Yes.
Which game should have they won that would make that win-loss a better scenario? The only one, we talked about this yesterday, the only one I can think of is the Collingwood game. But Collingwood were playing a lot better then than what they are now.
Yeah, I think you would also acknowledge, though, that, you know, throughout all of David Teague's tenure, Whitey, they continue to bleed goals, and not a lot continues to change in regards to that. You know, that they play a very one-on-one system. You know, they don't have their wings rolling back. You know, maybe it's that they just need that Camden McIntosh type. And what we did see with Melbourne is they realised they had really significant issues with their wings, and so they, you know, they went out and paid up money. They went and got a Langdon who is exceptional for them in not only charging forward but also coming back. So look, there are tweaks that they can make in game. Their issues right now for them is that their wingmen are players like Lockie O'Brien who they don't necessarily trust. So maybe it's putting your best wingman. You know, they had Sam Walsh as a wingman, but they pushed him into the inside mid. Maybe it's just a very simple tweak like that. Right now, they're a better side and they have much more talent than the team that they are playing at 3-6. And, you know, being in games like Melbourne, you know, being in games like that where you think you're a chance to win it, but yet again, didn't really get very close despite their output on the day.
We get the chat to the undefeated D's skipper, Max Gorn, who joins us again live from Casey Fields. Good morning, Max.
Good morning, Half. Morning, Whitey. Live from Casey Fields. I'm the first one in. I do the 7 o'clock slot with you guys, so I make sure I'm not driving. So I get in nice and early. So I'm the only one here today.
I can hear the birds chirping. They're up and about. They're pretty keen to see you, the birds.
Yeah, they are. They are here as well, the birds. there's a few flying over my head currently.
You do realise you're never getting back into the city. If you keep winning, you're out at Casey Fields forever.
Well, I did say, Whitey, that this ground might have something to do with it. The Gosh's paddock is literally a postage stamp. So being able to get out on the bigger ground has certainly helped us being able to defend and obviously make the MCG a bit of a fortress again. We've won a few in a row there now.
I think that's a great point, and perhaps understated. It is a basically just a little paddock, Gosh's paddock, and it's nowhere near the size of a AFL venue across the nation. I have no doubt, Max, that that's played a part in it and given you a chance to see what big field defence looks like, how to attack on the back of it, all that stuff, and work your way, work your systems much better. It's probably a story that hasn't been told that well, I imagine.
Yeah, but all, I mean, in fairness, Collingwood used it throughout their 2010-11 sort of period, so they managed to be able to have some success with it. But
sugar, that was a sugar hit. Look at them now. Look at them now, Max. Sugar hit.
It certainly helped us being able to defend the ground. And we were struggling at the MCG for a bit there. To be fair, in 2019, we were struggling at every ground. But we definitely were struggling at the G, but we've certainly made that a bit of a fortress again for us.
My word, you have. We'll get to more of that. Just paint the picture for us. What are you currently doing? You're sitting in the car in the grandstand. What are you doing?
No, I'm on the the other side of the ground to the headquarters.
Yep.
I've gone for a little bit of a walk. This is actually called the Gorn Wing. I won a VFL Best and Fairest in 2014, and this was the wing that I did it mostly on.
Is that where the wind blows?
Yeah, I'm sure you've been out here half. The wind certainly blows to one side down here at the fields.
My word, it does.
Hey, Max, you're 9 games into a season. Just tell us a bit about your own body. How are you feeling at the moment? 9 games in, nearly the halfway point of the season. Obviously, the team's flying. We'll get to that shortly. But how do you feel after 9 games?
I'm really good, half. Sorry, Whitey. I haven't had any sort of issues. A couple of bruises here and there, as a ruckman tends to have. But these last few weeks have been, I mean, albeit a little bit easier for me just because we've got an extra tall in the team and we're playing 3 tall forwards and 3 tall defenders. So I'm not required in a few down-the-line contests where you tend to get the bruises from, and I can just focus on my ruck work, especially in the week just gone of no Luke Jackson. I was just really another midfielder on the weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, particularly the role you play, 9 games in, I was just wondering whether you were, you know, it was harder to get out of bed or harder to sort of get yourself going at training. Is it helping the fact that you're winning, that the mood is better and everyone's sort of walking on top of the ground?
I'm sure subconsciously your body wakes up a little bit better post a win. I haven't noticed it too much. I tend to pull up well from games, and like last year with the 4-day, 5-day breaks, I was pulling up pretty well as well. So I'm not someone who complains about soreness. I tend to, for example, today we'll get out there for a little trot, and there's about usually 5 or 10 blokes every week that tend to not get out there for the run and are complaining about something. I really like to not miss that session.
That's interesting. Midway through the season, things are feeling good. That's a nice thing, but you're right. Winning makes you feel pretty good. How do you handle this now, Max? I'm intrigued as to what happens from here. I mean, everyone is talking about Melbourne. How do you handle that internally? The expectation now comes and it becomes more and more fervent every time you win a game. You might make it 10 this week. Who knows? Hopefully you do. What happens internally about the expectation and managing all that now for every player? Because I imagine with all the commentary and the people in the street and all the family that be asking you questions about how you're going and, you know, can you take it all the way and all that sort of stuff. How do you manage that?
I'm intrigued as well, huh? I'm excited for what this little period's going to bring. There's still, for example, the Sydney game. We lost to Sydney in Cairns last year, which was only about 13 games ago. And they ended up costing us our 2020 season. And so we're still hunting Sydney and knew what they were probably the better side against us in recent history. And MCG, they'd won 7 in a row against us at the MCG. So stuff like that, we're still definitely the hunters.
And, yep.
Carlton, it was a 1-point game against us last year. And again, they've had the better of us in the last sort of 3 or 4 years. So there's games like that where we're still definitely the hunters and we're still going in wanting to prove a point. And the Adelaide game last year was similar. So that'll be the same this week as well.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Little boxes to tick along the way. Do give you an opportunity to narrow the focus. Just on last weekend's game against the Blues, did you feel that it was... as polished a performance as you've had, or were you a little bit off what you've been in the last couple of weeks, do you reckon?
Well, still a little bit off in the first half. And these first quarters, we're giving up the first two goals in every game. And a bit of that is our set of bounce issue that we're trying to work on. The good thing is teams aren't scoring off their centre bounce wins against us, but we'd definitely rather be winning the centre bounces and getting it in our forward half. So that forward half footy was off in the first half, but it certainly came into the second half. And the second half was probably as polished as we played this year. Not necessarily kicking goals, but just restraining them from doing too much of the ball.
I haven't got the numbers in front of me, but you did get comprehensively whacked in the clearances across the ground. Minus 15, I think it was, for the game. Is that something that's happened a lot this year? I couldn't imagine that'd be the case. But also, how personally do you take that?
We've lost centre bounces, I know, almost every week, apart from maybe GWS in round two. So that's an issue that we're trying to rectify. We obviously got some pretty good midfielders in there, and I'm getting my hand to most of them. So we've got to sort out what the issue is and why can't we get the ball playing in our forward half. Around the ground stoppages, we've normally been quite good. It might have just been flipped. I think Cripps was pretty good at his first possession stuff on the weekend and was able to surge it forward. But it's certainly the way we're defending as both midfielders and defenders. We're turning stoppage losses into little wins for us. But ideally, we want to get the ball going forward first rather than having to defend that little surge.
So, Max, how do you rectify that? Is that something you do in the classroom, in theory, or is it something that you can actually do out at training despite the fact you don't have opponents? How do you fix that situation?
In the classroom, theory sounds pretty boring, I must say, Waddy. No, look, Adam Uze has obviously come in this year, and as much as he's helped our defence and our ball movement, our stoppages has probably gone backwards from where we were last year. Not any fault of his, but it's just something that we got to work on. And Ooze is having a lot of sleepless nights trying to get the best plan and best setups for us to be able to win stoppages. And I've got a pretty heavy hand in that in terms of centre bounces. I take a few centre bounce meetings throughout the week and watch a lot of vision, especially on the teams that do it well. So West Coast and Western Bulldogs are two teams that do it very well and sitting at the pointy end of the ladder. So I watch a lot of their vision, and Western Bulldogs are doing it at the moment without a dominant ruck, and West Coast are doing it with a dominant ruck. So you can do it sort of any way. I'll watch some vision again this week. The Adelaide-West Coast game will be a good one to watch because I like watching the best in West Coast, and we got Crows this week.
Yeah, so do you sense at times that the midfield of the opposition ruck to you, because as you said, often you'll get, most of the time, you'll get your first hand to it, that's something you've got to be aware of as much as trying to actually guide it to your own teammates?
Yeah, and there's also when you lose a couple early, so we lost a couple of clearance battles early in the year against Fremantle, and then in round three and four against Geelong and Richmond, we lost a couple of clearance battles, and you get on the back foot a little bit, just subconsciously, and you start hitting a little bit more defensively, and you start getting a bit boring and mundane with your centre bounce hits, and it becomes easier to read. And on the weekend, I certainly noticed Cripps just getting to my chest a lot, which is our boring and mundane hit is when I just hit it straight down into my chest. And once we started jazzing it up a little bit, we started getting a bit more from clearances. But it's funny, subconsciously you get more and more defensive when you're losing clearances, and that actually works against you. So when you've got big bodies like Cripps in there and some other guys that we played this year, like Luke Parker and Josh Kennedy last week, and I'm sure Rory Laird's getting clearances for fun at the moment. So we've got to work out how to hit away from those guys and be able to use our strength in obviously Petraka, James Harms and Clayton Oliver.
Well, I know Josh Walker loves the program. He listens a lot. North Melbourne defender had a big win on the weekend with his boys in Tasmania. 7 points to the good of the Hawks. He joins us on a Tuesday morning on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are well, mate. I know you love the program, and we appreciate that. That's very nice of you. How much did you love the weekend's game against the Hawks? Because that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? It was very overdue and a bit of relief and nice to sort of get that monkey off the back. Those zero wins
starting with a bit ominous. So it's a great relief. We're really happy with it.
We were talking to Max Gorn just before the break, and he retold a story back in 2013 where they lost the first eight, similarly to you, and then they won the ninth game by a point, and he was out for three nights straight just to celebrate.
it wasn't quite like that, but it was great to see. We've been working really hard, and we think we've been improving sort of gradually, and so to finally get the result is great, and gives a lot of young guys that are playing a lot of confidence going forward, and it can, you know, become infectious winning. So we hope there's more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. What have you seen improve in the last little while at the Kangas? I mean, you've been around for a little while now, over 100 games, three clubs. You've seen a lot in footy. Josh, yeah. What's improved from this edition of the Kangaroos?
No, I think it's just, obviously, there's a lot of change over the off-season and a new coach and plenty of new players. It was always just going to take a bit for it to gel and start to really come together. So, David Noble brought in a new game plan, which I think is really working really well and going to work really well. So we just had to, you know, take a sort of 6-8 games playing together and start to sink and really put it in a play. And we've done it for quarters, we've done it for halves, and now, well, I'll say three quarters because that first quarter didn't go too well. But, we did it for long enough that we got a result.
Now, Josh, you were at Brisbane at a similar time to where you are now with North Melbourne in regards to a rebuild. Do you see similarities? Because it clearly worked for Brisbane, and David Noble was part of that. He's now at the Kangaroos with you. What are the similarities, if any?
Yeah, they definitely are. He's certainly using a few things that we had up there at the time, so you can certainly see some similarities. And just focusing on, say, the fundamentals and getting the basics right and delivering the game plan and trying not to worry too much about, you know, winning yet at this stage. And although we want to, we've got to get the process right, which I think you've spoken about a few times before. So there's a lot of young talent that you see in guys like Tom Power who are coming through and playing great footy, and then they're 8-10 games in. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, Todd Goldstein comes in here and has a chat to us every few weeks, and he's commented a lot on the kids, and he's been at the Kangaroos a long time, and you can just see he's got real belief in this next group that are coming through, and there's not just two or three. There's over a dozen of them that he has a lot of faith in. Do you share that same sort of faith?
Yeah, absolutely. We have plenty of, you know, Tom Powell, Will Phillips, Wick Dozier. Even the guys three years in are really starting to come into their own now, and it's super exciting.
And just on your time at the Kangaroos, I mean, how have you found it from the other two clubs you've been at? I mean, what's obviously different phases and different starts to or generations of players there at the Kangaroos. How have you found fitting into that group?
No, I found it really easy. It's obviously you can get a bit nervous sort of fitting into a new club, and you hope it's all works out. But there's great people at the club, and I can't speak highly enough of the playing group and the staff and all that sort of thing. So I'm really enjoying it.
Are we going to see Robbie Tarrant at any stage soon?
I think so, yeah. He's back doing some running and joining a couple of drills the other day. So I'm not exactly sure on the time frame they got set out, but he's obviously starting to rejoin the main group with some stuff. So I think we will, yeah.
And the Ben Cunnington impact. I mean, clearly he's a proficient ball winner and, well, he's an amazing ball winner, really, particularly in the contest. Have you seen many players like him in your time?
No, he's an absolute jet, isn't he? And it makes such a difference when he's in the team. So, I tell you what, down back, it's nice when you see him get his hands on it in the midfield because you know it's going our way.
Cole Langford on the line from the Bombers, who are taking on the Kangas 4:40 this Sunday at Marvel Stadium. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, guys.
Yeah, you just had Josh Walker on sitting in front of you. I mean, are you happy to be playing second fiddle to Josh Walker this morning?
I don't know about that. But, you know, okay, gave me a bit more of a sleep in today. So,
how are things tracking at the Bombers from your perspective? You've been around a little while. You've seen the system as it works in the AFL, and you're feeling more comfortable in your skin. Clearly, the way you're playing. But how are you seeing the Bombers' performance this season?
Yeah, I still don't think we've played our best footy. We haven't played probably a four quarter game since our St Kilda game. But I think each week we're kind of improving our system and the way we want to play, and I think we're seeing glimpses. You know, on the weekend we were pretty gritty. We didn't play our best footy at all, but we're definitely seeing improvement. You know, we got a really young back line. I think that's a massive part of our game that we're still improving. But yeah, I'm seeing improvement each week, and I'm really excited for the second half of the year.
What did Ben Rutten say after the game on the weekend? It was a bit of a game that was all over the shop. You had your moments, Freo had their moments. You were able to come back late and win it. What was the summary of the performance from the coach on the weekend?
Yeah, a little bit what you just touched on. It was a little bit of an ugly win. But we've had a number of close games. I think he was just real happy with the maturity we showed as a group to kind of close out a game, not cough it up late. And I think, he's more happy about that kind of growth instead of losing another game by under a goal.
What was different, Kyle, in the last 10 minutes that saw you hold on as opposed to giving up late leads like has been the case in a couple of games recently?
I think we just did a bit more of a kick mark. I mean, in the past, we've gone a bit fast and we haven't kind of really tried to isolate the game too much, and it's led to turnovers, which have led to goals against us. But I think we just took the pace off it. We just took a little bit of time off the clock, and I think a lot of players, whenever they had the ball, just had a lot more of awareness, apart from Will Snelling in that last 30 seconds who crossed to Zaka. I think everyone else was, pretty aware of the game.
And, Kyle, it's obviously a very different place to last year for the players that are no longer there, Ben Rutten taking over. You've been at the club a while now. What are the noticeable shifts you've seen that has seen Essendon start to play a little bit better footy on a regular basis?
I think Truck's definitely been a massive driver. He's kind of taken us back to school on a lot of the history of the club, which has been a little bit interesting. Obviously, Truck coming from Adelaide and South Australia, but he really invested himself, and he's really made us really learn about their Essendon culture and what the jumper really means to past players and what it should mean to current players. To really create a DNA where we want to be known, as a kind of disciplined, hardworking team. So I think we've kind of done a lot of work on that throughout the whole of pre-season, as well as, working on the game plan that Truck kind of took over last year from Woosha, which is just improving. But I think it's just probably grounding us a little bit more and just bringing the culture a lot more tighter.
So who did you barrack for growing up?
I was a doggie, so having Jira at the club's pretty good. I used to watch him growing up. So I give him a little bit of stick now and then, but yeah, I was a doggie supporter.
Very good. So what did you learn about Essendon that you didn't know that may help you be a better footballer?
Not necessarily. But also about a bit of football, but it's probably a bit more of an understanding, and it makes me want to be an Essendon person and be an Essendon player. And that goes all the way back to the McCracken family that actually started Essendon Football Club, back in the 1800s. So I think just learning the history, and of course, we've done a lot of stuff with past players. I'm lucky enough to have Job on phone call that I can talk to whenever I want. But, the likes of Gavin Wanganeing and all the other number fours, we have an opportunity to talk to them and kind of get their experience for the club and what the club really meant to them. So, obviously, with a rich history, 16 premierships, there's a lot of past players that, speak very highly of the club, and we kind of try and get whatever we can out of them and give us a little bit more authority when we put on the jumper.
When one of the great minds talks and that makes statements about the game and the state of it, we listen. Greg Chappell is absolutely one of those, an icon in Australian sport, let alone Australian cricket. He joins us on The Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are very well, thank you. Great to have you on the program. And I must admit, I was fascinated to read your comments regards to your vision for the future of the Australian domestic summer. How long have you been thinking about all these things, Greg?
About 50 years.
Well, you finally made good. Well done.
Look, over the journey, obviously, cricket's gone through some changes, not least of all the different formats and so on. And, the summer's got pretty cluttered. Big Bash obviously holds takes up a big percentage of the main part of the summer, and it has to if it's going to work, because it needs people being on holidays and able to attend. So I think we've just got to look at other ways of fitting what we need in around it. My point is that becoming a good batsman in the modern era is harder than it's ever been because of the different formats and the chopping and changing during the summer months. So why not look at using some of the other months?
Well, one of your quotes from the Chapel Foundation dinner where you were speaking the other night that got people talking was, if we were designing a structure from scratch now, we wouldn't design it the way we've got it. I think New South Wales could possibly have a second team. And was part of the conversation you had. What does your vision look like, just for those that may not be aware?
Yeah, well, you know, the issue as I see it for young batsmen is that you start the summer with a few Shield games and then you go into Big Bash and then you come out the other side and play a few more Shield games. I've seen a lot of young blokes who look very promising at the start of the season in red ball cricket, make some runs, go away and play T20 cricket and come back and struggle for the back half of the year. So I'm suggesting we've got to start looking from sort of September onwards at playing red ball cricket in the northern states, particularly for the first part of the program, Queensland, Northern Territory, two of the obvious places that you can play cricket in those months, and fitting some more Sheffield Shield cricket in a bigger block so that if someone starts to get a bit of a run on, you know, they might get 6 or 8 or 10 games in a row rather than 4 or 5 games in a row. So just using those early months of the, you know, the summer or the better weather and following on from football seasons, let's start playing some cricket because these guys are on contract. They're available 10 months of the year. So let's look at ways that we can better utilise the time that we've got.
And Greg, the other thing that I thought was really interesting as well is in regards to potentially having more teams. I know that that is sensitive to some, but I'll give you an example of someone like Dan Solway in New South Wales, 25, 26 years of age, averages 40 in first-class cricket. He can't get a New South Wales contract. I just worry that there are not enough people that are staying in the game of cricket or wanting to be a professional cricketer because of the lack of opportunities.
Yeah, well, again, you know, when the cricket program was designed, the population was a lot less than it is today. You know, we had, less teams. We've have increased, obviously, Tasmania have come into the competition, but having been involved in our youth programs for the last 15 years or so, you know, we've added teams, a New South Wales country team using Canberra as the base. We've had 2 Victorian teams in our youth cricket. We've increased, Northern Territory's potential by some of the kids that miss out on, you know, Victorian and New South Wales teams representing Northern Territory to get an opportunity. A number of those kids that weren't selected by their mainstay have actually done well and pushed on and got contracts elsewhere. You know, I think we need a draft. I think we need more teams. We've got to get the better kids playing. You know, there were probably a dozen good young cricketers that I'm aware of who were sitting on the sidelines this summer not playing any red ball cricket, and that's not healthy for Australian cricket.
Yeah, and I mean, some of that was due to COVID, but things like second 11 cricket, you talked about potentially more teams, Australia A opportunities there. There doesn't seem to be as many opportunities out there for players to not only push up for higher honours, but just to develop as cricketers.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, your point there about Australia A, you know, we saw it with India this last summer. You know, through injury, they were forced to pick extra players later in the test series, and Gill came in and did well. Siraj came in and did well, but they've had fairly comprehensive India A careers. You know, they've played 15 or 20 India A games all around the world. You know, Green and Pekoski have probably played 1 or 2 games outside Australia, and you know, that's a big difference. You know, they weren't untried cricketers that came into that Indian team. They were pretty hardened international cricketers. And, you know, I think if we start the summer earlier, play a big whack of particularly our red ball cricket early, after the Big Bash, you know, we should concentrate then on our elite players playing some Australia A cricket, and not only in Australia, but around the world.
Yeah. Now, we've got to ask you, Cam Bancroft obviously is in the news again over the weekend. What would you, if you were at Cricket Australia, what would you do? How would you handle the latest situation?
That's a very good question. You know, look, it's fraught with danger. We're the only country that's even bothering about, worrying about this subject. You know, the ICC hasn't cared less about ball tampering for years.
anyone who's been involved in it's got to slap over the wrist and carry on. You know, we took a stand, and you know that can be commended on the one hand, but you know, going one out is a bit of a challenge. You know, somehow we need to give the ruling body, the ICC, some teeth to be able to deal with these issues. Everyone in world cricket has been aware for as long as I can remember that people have been tampering with the ball. And most people have turned a blind eye to it. And in most cases, it hasn't made that much difference to the game. And in some ways, it's made the game more interesting. I just think we need a broader brush approach to it. You know, picking on one player or two players, three players or even 15 players is not going to make it. So I don't see why we need to go out on a limb. If it's a problem, then it needs to be dealt with on a game-wide basis.
Yeah. Does it sit uncomfortably with you that Cameron Bancroft and Dave Warner and Steve Smith are sitting as the three as opposed to the whole team? How does that sit with you?
Well, I think it's broader than that again. Yeah, I mean, if you only look at one segment of it, that's all you're going to see. You know, I don't like the fact that, you know, we Australia are being painted, and those three individuals are being painted as the bad guys, when I know there are a lot of people around the world who've been doing this for a long time and are, you know, probably laughing up their sleeve at us at the moment that we're arguing amongst ourselves.
You know, we've obviously had some, you know, some information. We've got some accurate information on our performances over the season. In 9 rounds, we've failed against, you know, a couple of very, very good sides. We sit second and third on the ladder, and the West Coast got us over there. Outside of that, we've got some clear information about what we need to get better at. And the great part is we've got a lot of the season still to play, and we're looking forward to our opportunities to get better.
Ken Hinckley, coach of the Power, speaking about their situation at the moment. There's some concern that they might be just flat track bullies. Rodney Eade knows about them. He's probably coached against many of them. Coached against many of them throughout his magnificent time in the game as a coach, and probably played against plenty of them as a player as well. Joins us as part of the team on a Tuesday. Good morning, Rocket.
Morning, Daniel. How are you, mate?
Going very well, thank you. Who's the biggest flat track bully you came across in your time, player or coach?
Gee, that's a bit harsh. I'm going to reserve the right to it.
Probably a fair answer too, I would think. Just on the Power, while we're there, because I think they're a fascinating watch at the moment. I still believe that they're good enough to win the Premiership, but they have been found wanting, Rocket, against some of the better teams so far in 2021. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I agree. I still think probably early in the year, I thought they were probably the best team in the comp. But they have been found wanting. I think their midfield's okay, but it's not as deep as some of, like the Bulldogs and other teams, as in star quality. So their defence, I think, has been shored up, but maybe kick some goals. But there is a reliance on Charlie at full forward, and Charlie's not a Tony Lockett. Like he is a contest, but he doesn't kick a lot of goals against a good team. So they need to find some other avenues. They need to, no Rosie's down, the two other young blokes not playing. So they had a challenge of, I don't think Marshall's really taken the next step against a good side. So that Georgiades is improving. But to me, they probably just don't kick enough goals for the time that goes inside 50.
So if you're Ken Hinckley and you've got a team that finished on top of the ladder last year at the end of the home and away and wasn't good enough to make the grand final, clearly, and you come in and you start the season so well, as you said, Rocket, and then you've lost a few games to competitors, and they're the games you want to try and measure yourself against. What are you saying to your boys? What are you investigating? How far down are you drilling into this? Because it's round 9. Like, it's not, it's got 14 rounds of the season to go. We've got plenty of time to sort this out. What are you drilling into?
Yeah, I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater and change everything everything that they're doing. I think they just need some tweaks. The time now, whether they haven't got as much depth, I thought they had good depth, maybe they haven't got as much depth as to replace what they've got out, and that hurts them. Lysette's out as well. Mm-hmm. So I think Richmond obviously covered the other night, but I think generally if you lose quality players, it's really going to hurt teams. Because it's the competition's even, so they don't trick. I think their inside 50s, the quality of inside 50s, where they kick it and how they kick it and what their entries are. They tend to underheat just to bang it, get it in their play territory, which a lot of teams do. But I think
their forwards one-on-one or untalented enough, I don't think, at the moment. Gray's a star, but he's not playing the output that he had before. I think they need to get some separation and need to be able to direct the ball, so it gives them a bit more opportunity.
Rocket, how do you coach from a mental side? So, Charlie, it seems at times that he tries too hard. And it's a little bit the same with Max King at St Kilda and a couple of the other St Kilda players in front of goal. So when it becomes a mental thing, is that something a senior coach can fix, or does that have to be done by others?
I think it's a combination. I think it depends on probably the knowledge of the senior coach. Depends whether, you know, it's best to outsource that as a goalkeeping coach, whether it's a psychologist to be able to get your mental routine and pair that back a bit. Yeah, it can be a bit of both. I think Max King has said to me he most of his misses were to the right, so which I think is a good thing. If you miss the same side all the time, there's obviously a flaw that can be fixed. If you miss, if you're spraying them both ways, well, good luck. I think Max King, that last one you can see from behind the goal, that where the camera was, he ran out a bit to the right and then stayed straight, so he was always going to miss to the right. So there's a technical flaw that you can fix. And I think generally he's got a reasonably good technique, so I don't think it's going to be difficult. But the psychology of it, I think that you still got to be positive. He's getting the ball. Just say the next one you get, know that you're going to kick it. Train on the track, but also want the ball. Don't get to a stage now of not wanting the ball because you're scared of missing the goals. That's going to be a double negative. You still need to be able to attack the footy. He's winning the ball well. I think it played with his mind because he, Max King, because he dropped the mark in that last quarter. He fumbled that one inside 50 in the third quarter. So it can be an ongoing problem. So they've got to arrest that straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we've been debating this pretty much all season, but it's sort of intensified in recent days. A simple question. Do you think David Teague can coach?
Oh, yeah, it's a bit harsh.
No, but do you think he's a good coach? I'll rephrase it, sorry.
I think it's always, this is going to sound like a thing, I think it's always hard to judge a coach totally outside the four walls. So there's a few aspects. There's obviously the preparation, it's match day, and then there's the psychology of being the group to be able to, which I suppose is part of preparation, but preparation, I mean, about the opposition and the tactics and strategies and how you're going to play and the game plan, et cetera, how you're going to defend. And then there's the psychology of the group as well. Publicly, what David's saying, I don't think you can say the same message week in and week out. So whether that's his psychology element, I don't think you can say we're on the right track all the time. And now we'll take some learnings out and we'll take some positives. I mean, some very poor efforts amongst those losses. And when you speak publicly, I think you're always addressing the supporters. You're not addressing the players. You've already addressed the players. So you're not addressing the players via another medium. So you're telling the supporters. Now, the psychology of that is, well, we've got to tell the supporters you're not happy enough. That it is disappointing. They want to hear that we're going to do something differently. And it seems, though, to probably get to more to answer your question, if you keep doing the same thing and get the same result, well, it's not the right way to go, is it? So they need to change some things. And I haven't seen anything really that's changed except a few little magnets here and there that's been moved. But generally at the moment, we're seeing the same thing and the same results happening.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.